Hey there, welcome to 8-Tail and 29, a podcast that looks at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a Wednesday evening after a win over the Wizards, a loss to the Celtics, and a loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, the last of which is probably freshest in your mind. Glenn, do you have any special rituals that Hawks fans might use if the Hawks should ever lose Jalen Johnson and DeAndre Hunter at the same time again?
I haven't read all the Harry Potter books and seen all the movies and stuff, but it feels like it would be like require something at that level, so something like just in another dimension of manipulation. So let's hopefully not land in that scenario. I got nothing.
All right. I guess other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, what did you think of the Cavs Hawks game?
It's funny because I posted a few defensive clips this morning before my work day. I have to do that around 5 or 6 o'clock for me to get that. And man, that was the worst, in my view, that was the worst defensive performance than the Pacers game. I mean, I know the Pacers put up a billion points, right?
Right.
But my contrast between those two is that that Pacers game. And even Quinn said after that game that there was some positive, defensive takeaways,
I agree, yeah.
right? There was some like ridiculous shot making in that Pacers game, right? That's not what the Cavs were doing last night. The Cavs were getting to the rim. The Hawks couldn't contain the ball seemingly at all. Their help was out of sync. Help timing was out of sync. Help location was out of sync. And I think on the rewatch, my takeaway was that's because the resistance of the point of attack was so bad. And so it was one of those things where like their defense failed at every level, like at the point of attack, and then it kind of collapsed from there. Like how do you execute as low man if the guy with the ball is coming with a full head of steam to the paint? So it was a miserable watch on the defensive end of the court. And they've got some things to work through for sure. I know the Cavs are kind of a unique matchup. They'll put both Allen and Mobley sometimes on the in the dunker spot, one on each right and one on the right side, one on the left side, and kind of just give Garland and Mitchell all the space in the top of the floor. But that was a brutal defensive performance.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess without disagreeing with that the point of attack defense left something to be desired. The Cavs do kind of have something in Garland and Mitchell that they had a good knack for making that point of attack not very effective. When it was sort of a big a small big pick and roll, they kind of had a knack for mixing up kind of sometimes they would split the two defenders, sometimes they would fake like they were going to split the two defenders. Like it just felt very clean from them in terms of just blowing up the containment.
I mean, I don't know how Quinn and staff kind of solve for that. I don't know what the solution is there, but this was the kind of the matchup. I mean, for me, like they seemed like 3 quarters committed to kind of be getting the big to the level of the screen, and then we saw examples. We've talked about this before when it's Bogey and Bay, behind all that action, it's tough for them. They don't really have the athleticism, the kind of athleticism you need behind the play. And they were exposed kind of in that way. And
That's kind
so
of fair, but like, sorry, I don't mean to take it on a tangent, but like, they don't communicate well either. Like, they're just like out of position before the play even starts when it's those two.
There were two like examples of Bay. It looked really, really bad. Like in the first quarter, Bay was low man and just, had no timing and stuff. But like the first one on the rewatch, like he and DeJounte, I was like, should DeJounte be low here? DeJounte was clearly communicating to Bay, like, you've got the rim, even though DeJounte was lower, than Bay. So they were just kind of disorganized and disconnected on a lot of defensive possessions. And that's not what they've been this year. Their defensive shortcomings show up in a consistent way that's tied to the roster construction, is tied to them, throwing offensively oriented kind of lineups on the floor, for good stretches and things like that. But this was a different kind of set of patterns in this game. So, we can all have a bad day at work. Hopefully it's an anomaly and they can kind of get back to being structured. Trying to do all the things they do without Jaylen, I think, is super hard, really, really, really hard. It's going to be interesting to see kind of which way they go to kind of try to solve for some of the things that we saw in that Cavs game. I never want to overreact to a single game. My belief is teams are never as good as they look after their best game. And they're never as bad as they look after their worst game. The reality is always somewhere in between those two points. And the Hawks, have been playing, doing a lot of good stuff. We talked about their resilience, their willingness to kind of keep working and stuff. But, they're underwater record-wise. I mean, Hawks fans certainly would love to see them be, three games over 500 as opposed to kind of where they are now and all of that. But it's going to be interesting to see how they try to kind of get things right. Do they go back to some more drop without Jaylen? Do they feel like we don't have the athleticism to get Clint and Yeka up the floor all the time? So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of try to address some of this.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder if I've kind of felt all along that the natural pairings among the bigs is Clint with Bay, Jaylen with Onyeka, and that latter grouping is more effective at the showing kind of defense that has seen them get beat time and time again on cuts and things of that nature. And it just, Clint doesn't seem to like being up. Bay just has all sorts of troubles when he's trying to defend the weak side. But at the same time, like, you kind of want Bay's shooting to free things up for Capella so that he can do stuff on offense. Because as much as Clint brings to the defensive end, I think there have been games recently where his offensive performance has kind of been a drag, especially early in games. And it didn't work necessarily all that great early on when it was lineups like Hunter, Bay, Capella, because it just didn't seem like they had enough passing, enough connectivity. But I like where Hunter is right now. It seems like he's sort of playing within himself, offensively speaking, not trying to do things that are beyond him. And if he can be that, maybe that trio can work together with Hunter, Bay, and Capella. I don't know. But it just doesn't seem like neither Bay nor Capella is being their best selves in the current setup.
Yeah, and Quinn basically has to play that group without Jaylen, right? He could, with Jaylen, he could kind of work around that if he wanted to, but right now it's basically impossible for him to do that. I don't know if, Wes Matthews will be able to start playing more minutes and if he'll be able to kind of leverage his availability to shift that, here and there, that would be helpful while Jaylen's out. They're the professional kind of defense that Matthews offers and brings. But this is a tough spot, and sometimes it takes an injury to kind of really show you what the vulnerability of a kind of a roster construction is. And every team has, no one has the perfect roster, right? In some ways it feels like Jaylen, apart from Trey, like Jaylen was the one that they absolutely could not afford to lose, right? Because he just does so much in transition, his athleticism, the defensive half court, his connecting skills on offense, just kind of all that sort of stuff. But, Hunter's, the good stretch he's on can help. Hunter's a really, really good team defender. But how do you, on this road trip, how do you not push Hunter to 37, 38 minutes every single game? That with his history, that's not something you, I think, really want to kind of opt into. So it's a tough one, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see how Quinn and his coaching staff kind of you know, work through this. But hopefully that defensive game was an anomaly, you know. And I know that some listeners might be like, come on, Glenn, you know, they're bottom five, you know, defense now, but you know, I haven't looked today, but you know, they're probably in that range with the kind of stretches they've been on. But yeah, that performance was, you know, not characteristic to at least the habits we've seen. Talent, length, size, the challenges that kind of come with this roster makeup, that's going to be there, right? But communication, connectivity, you know, working together, all that stuff was way off in this game. And that's not been characteristic of them this year. So hopefully an anomaly.
I mean, it's a tough sell, right? Like, it's easier for Quinn to sell the offense to his team in the offseason, in the training camp and preseason, where it's, okay, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, if they haven't done a whole lot of it yet, it's easier to have belief, you know, to have some buy-in. And then it's more difficult when you've struggled with it for a while and teams have scouted it and try to pick at your weaknesses. I don't think it's any secret at this point. It seemed like Cleveland knew for sure that the Hawks' weakness is, hey, you know, run your offense, get the ball, you know, to the, you know, roll man, whatever it is. And then once you start cutting, good things are going to happen. If you get into the short roll, if you can switch sides of the floor and just keep that ball moving until somebody can cut and test the integrity of that back line, you know, good things can happen for you. So, I mean, now it's going to be a struggle. And you were wrong. They're not a bottom five defense. They're a bottom six defense, but they're not a bottom five defense.
No, it's okay. The sky isn't falling completely, I guess. but even like when like Strus and Yang were on, like they're not the best cutters, but they could shoot the daylights out of the ball. So they would just like collapse the Hawks defense on the strong side. Hawks low man would be all the way in front of the rim, and they were getting, you know, wide open shots in the weak side, you know, corner, you know, pretty frequently too. So that those are, again, you can't, you know, make Trey bigger. You can't make DeJounte bigger. If DeJounte is dealing with kind of a nagging injury, you can't get him over that magically all of a sudden. That matters more with no Jalen in my mind, right? If there's something that's kind of bothering him some, but the communication, the connectivity, all that stuff is something that can be is an effort and execution thing. And they've been pretty solid in those areas this year. Been kind of the schedule's been kind of a grind lately. They're on this road trip, you know, and they're going to be on the, you know, they're not going to be home much. I guess with the last two games of the in-season tournament, I guess they caught one more home game there. I guess that was going to happen. I was going to be a home and away, right? Kind of that, that situation. Yeah. So that'll maybe help them to get home for a couple days. They're at some point later next month. I mean, you know, and the Trey went back to not be able to kind of make his shot. So it's just the team just didn't look like they felt good about themselves in that game. And an 82 game schedule, you know, that happens. So it's interesting. You know, I've been kind of tracking their wins and losses. And if you go back and kind of go through who they've beat and who they've lost to, teams that have come into this season with a lot of continuity have had an edge on them, right? So even the Hornets, who not high expectations for them, but they basically ran back the same exact group. You know, the Knicks, I mean, basically the same exact group, right? Mm-hmm. Indiana, you know, a ton of continuity there, and a couple of, you know, spot upgrades and stuff like that. They beat the Timberwolves. Timberwolves didn't have Towns much last year. They beat the Pelicans. Pelicans didn't have Zion much last year. And so there seems to be this kind of trend in their wins and losses that when they're facing teams here early in the season that carried a lot of continuity over, those teams have an edge against the Hawks, who are still working to incorporate some new stuff. When the other team has their own kind of continuity challenge, it seems like to be more of a level playing field. That's a trend that I'm kind of seeing across there. And you know, at some point in time, we have to stop saying the new stuff, the new stuff, the new stuff. I don't know, you know, there's a specific date that we all have in mind. But the teams that carry a lot of continuity into the season are beating them regularly. And the teams that didn't are either competitive games, the Hawks are winning those games.
I've enjoyed the Wes Matthews experience. I think he's had some moments. I've enjoyed watching him play defense. I've enjoyed watching him work as an on-ball defender. Even he had a couple of moments last night that are like, ugh. But if he's not fully healthy, you know, you're going to need to go a little bit deeper into the rotation. And so the Hawks have played AJ Griffin. What are you seeing there? Is it time for him to, like, go to the G League and just blow it out for 34 minutes a game down there for a while? Like, does, you know, you talk about continuity and reps. Does he need reps so that he can come in and be effective for 7 minutes a game and not lose confidence the first time he misses a shot or gets a step behind on a rotation?
I mean, it's a great question. He probably would, if he's not going to play regularly. I mean, with Jalen out, you'd think, okay, he has to play, right? But maybe not. Maybe Wes Matthews is getting to 20 minutes a game, or maybe they throw Garrison Matthews out there some, you know. But he needs to play, you know, wherever. He needs to play somewhere. And I think the dilemma for Quinn is, I think we can all see he's not ready on defense to do the things that they're asking their wings to do in this defensive scheme. He struggled, just like everybody else, keeping the ball in front against the Cavs. Like you mentioned, like, Wes Matthews could do nothing with Mitchell, right? Mm-hmm. Or Garland, but that wasn't unique. You know, all of the Hawks kind of on-ball defenders kind of struggled with that. And so, I mean, I think giving him, you know, three or four games to kind of go down and just, like, get really, really heavy minutes is good. I've only caught two games to the College Park. I know you've been going. Are they running, in your view, kind of the same stuff? I mean, is he going to get the kind of reps that will help him kind of acclimate more with the varsity team if he goes down? What are you seeing in that way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it kind of twofold. Like, I mean, I asked Ryan Schmidt, the head coach, I asked him, I was like, you know, what sort of continuity do guys like Seth Lundy and company get, you know, if they toggle back and forth between College Park and Atlanta? He's like, we do the same stuff. And then he kind of backed it up. He's like, okay, defensively, we do 100% of the same stuff. Offensively, we put in a couple of wrinkles because we don't have Trey and DeJounte. So, you know, offensively, it might be a little bit different, but he said that, you know, the defensive experience should be identical. And they're pretty good on deep lines. Like, they execute fairly well on defense. Like, they've got the personnel. They look like they're well-tuned. You know, the G League is, I don't know what it is. I guess the NBA just seems like there's more parity than ever. Right now, it seems like the G League, you watch a couple of these games and it's like the talent level and just the overall skill level for teams, it seems like it's all over the place. Like, some of these teams look great and some of them look just absolutely dreadful. You know, and College Park looks pretty good, and they definitely look like they can execute defensively. So I think defensively it would be a great experience for him, in terms of just, he wouldn't have to feel like, he's out of place. Like, it looks like they're fine-tuned enough that he just has to fill a role and he can get the reps there doing it and not, you know, get a positive feedback loop, because there are some good defenders. Chris Silva is really great. Like, you know, he can execute in a lot of different ways defensively for that team. And they've got another 7-footer, and Norris is kind of flexible between the 4 and the 5 and pretty competent. So, like, I think it would, you know, defensively he'd get a lot of reps, and, you know, I don't know what it would look like offensively, but.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely would also benefit from seeing the ball go through the net, right?
Yes.
I mean, that would help too. And sometimes, like, having that stuff kind of happen on both ends for you in an environment where you feel more set up for success, you have more reliable kind of rotation minutes that a play, and you know what the plan is, as opposed to kind of getting tapped when there's a, you know, someone gets into foul trouble or whatever it is, you know, with the Hawks. But and it's a good point on Silva. Silva can get up the floor. He can really move, you know, for us. He's a bit undersized, you know, kind of like a Kongu is and stuff. So he's great for kind of, you know, kind of giving them that, you know, help at the level and being able to recover and things like that. So, I mean, it seems like a good idea if they feel like they can manage without that extra body. You know, that's kind of the key thing there is, you know, does Quinn trust Garrison to play real minutes right now? You know, because I think that would be the next person in line to get minutes would be Garrison Matthews, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know where Quinn's head is on that. So, yeah, I mean, man, what a punch to the gut to lose Jalen. I mean, I mean, he was just really turning heads. I mean, even kind of, you know, casual kind of non-Hawks media, you know, you just kind of see, you know, wow, you know, whether it's on Twitter or whatever, you know, I mean, he was really catching a lot of eyes, you know, and so it sucks for him to kind of lose that continuity of, you know, of time and all that. Hopefully he'll be back, you know, before too late. So, but I mean, every team deals with injuries. Every, you know, absolutely it happens. You know, it's harder when it's the guy who has a unique kind of set of offerings, you know, that's hard, that you can't. Jalen's the kind of guy you can't take one player and replace all the things that he was giving them. It takes a little bit of that player, a little bit of that player, a little bit of that player. It's so much harder, and that's what makes him so valuable, you know. But this is part of how the league works, and they've got to figure it out.
I wanted to talk just a little bit about the Boston game.
Yeah.
Just in the third quarter, you know, at halftime, Trey's got 20 points. He's got a pretty good rhythm going. And, you know, Boston came out of the half and they started to guard Capella with Tatum as opposed to the center. And they, you know, stashed the center out in the corner as they did for years with Robert Williams. And when, you know, Trey and Capella would run an action, they would just blitz Trey and let Capella roam free. And, you know, the center was kind of ready to rotate, ready to get to the rim if Clint's going to get there. But basically they're letting Clint roam free out of these actions. You know, what, it didn't seem like the Hawks had a counter to that. Like, you know, do you want to give the ball to Clint in the short roll? It seemed like they were almost daring the Hawks to do that. And that might not be the wisest thing to do. Like if a team does that to the Hawks, what do you want to see them do?
Yeah, well, that was uniquely hard because, you know, how has Quinn solved for that at other times in the season? 1-4 pick and roll, right? And letting Jalen be the guy in the short roll. And Jalen's been, you know, really, really good at that. In the past, not really so much this season, you know, they would use Hunter some in the short roll. And he doesn't have quite the, you know, passing acumen, but you know, he's a solid decision maker, like kind of, but he can see the floor. When he can kind of see everything, he's a little bit more reliable in those phases of play, I think. And so I wonder if, like, hey, we got to go to, you know, Hunter 1-4 with, you know, Hunter kind of short rolling, you know, can Bay do that, right? Bay is going to be more of a guy that attacks the paint, you know, and tries to be physical with the defender he encounters down there. But I mean, Bay, you know, Bay's an average passer, I think, for a guy who plays the 3 and the 4, you know. So I, you know, to me, like, if it's Clint out there, like, can you get into like Hunter being the guy who's screening and rolling? You know, I think he can do that. I mean, he's never going to do it at Jalen's level. Do you lean more into a Kongwu minutes? Cause the Kongwu has that skill set. You know?
I mean, that's kind of what they did, right? Like that, right. When Clint came out, he didn't come back.
Right. Yeah. And then the other issue showed up was kind of the rebounding, right? you know, in that game. And so
yeah, they missed Jalen.
they miss Jalen for sure. I mean, he does really give them so much. And like, and one, like one little bright spot, you know, in that Cavs game was, I mean, Hunter was trying to work really hard as a rebounder, you know, yep, trying to kind of contribute there. And so Bogey always, you know, puts some effort in there as well and stuff. So, I mean, I just wonder, like, are they prepping themselves to run more 1-4? You know, I mean, there's been like three games where they heavy doses of trading Jalen, you know, in the middle pick and roll, just heavy, heavy doses of that. And it went really, really well. Do they trust any of those other guys? You know, it's kind of funny. You think about this, it's like, oh my gosh, like if they still had Gallo, you know, someone like that, you know, that could kind of do that. That would be really helpful. You know, Gallo was awesome in the short role. I mean, I haven't really seen him play this year. I don't know how he looks after the injury. I have to be honest about that, you know, but what he gave them in that area a few seasons ago was like really, really helpful, you know. But you know, that right now that's a Kongwu. And I mean, Bruno can do a little of that. I don't think you want that in any kind of high leverage minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, 3, 4, 5 possessions to tide you over till you can get kind of, you know, a regular rotational center back in. You know, Bruno's really good in DHO and, you know, kind of some safe stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. But it is, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know if you saw, but I posted that the clip of the first, I think it was the first possession where Clint went right at Jarrett Allen in the short roll. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hunter's wide open all by himself on the weak side corner. And, you know, Clint is going right at the rim and Allen's already parked right in front of the rim. And it's like, you know, so I posted it on Twitter. It's like, man, this ball has to go to Hunter. It just has to go to Hunter, you know? And Clint, like, he'll surprise you, like, I don't know, 5 times a month, like with a pass, you know, he'll make it. But it seems like if he gets it, he has to get it like higher than the free throw line to have like some confidence in what he's doing. If he catches the ball at the nail or like a half step below the nail, he's like, the rim is like a magnet, you know, for him.
I mean, it's just kind of a feel thing. Like I think he has a good sense of where people are on the floor and who's open and where the ball should go. But like on a play like that, he's dribbling. He's like looking down to gather his dribble. Like he's not going to know where people are if he's dribbling.
Yeah, that's true. And he seems to be a little more comfortable kicking to the 3-point break as opposed to like the corners. Mm-hmm. You know, either kind of kicking back out, you know, laterally or back up the floor. It's tricky. They run this little kind of horn set where, usually Bogey or Hunter sets the first screen and then kind of gets a little bit kind of a flare screen action. It's like, can they get that bi-directional movement going? Will that help? You know, can you involve one of your better shooters and as part of a two-man kind of screening action that can create a little bit more flow, you know, that where you don't necessarily have to have the short roll. And, you know, they have that set that they only use some. And it's like, okay, without Jalen, will they be leaning more into that stuff? You know, it'll be interesting to see.
You got anything else you want to talk about tonight?
We're hoping Wendy plays, right?
Sure. Yeah. I'm not rooting for anybody to be injured ever. Everybody be healthy.
Yeah.
Jalen included.
And I understand Hawks fans thinking like, oh man, we need to win. Right. And Wimby just kind of creates a challenge. Like even as a rookie, he's the kind of player. It's like, how, like, you know, you think about like a parallel in football, like the, you know, scout team, you know, it's like, how do you like replicate like what you're going to face in Wimby, you know, ever, you know, it's just, it's kind of crazy to think about that, but yeah, hopefully he plays. Spurs haven't been winning a lot of games. And the Hawks are dealing with some adversity, kind of their own. Hopefully for Hawks fans, they can kind of go out and take care of business. But this is, again, with Wimby, it's like, this is one where you love to have Jalen, you know. So, do you think they defend him with Clint? Like, if you know, what do you think probably, that looks like?
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
I think they defend him with Clint. I mean, I think they might defend him with Onyeka at times. Like, I don't think that they'll hesitate there and just see how it goes. I mean, everything's sort of kind of have to see it happen a few times just because he's different.
No doubt about it.
It's not really something that you really test out on paper. You really got to kind of see it happen.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him like three times in Vegas, you know, and it's something. I mean, it's like you're like your brain is just for a second trying to recalibrate, you know, kind of what's going on here. And then you like his handle is not great yet, but you can see it's coming along, you know. He sees the passes. He doesn't always execute the passes, but he sees them, you know. And he's a little bit choppy in that, like, when he has the ball, he's either working to, like, it's fairly obvious he's trying to get a shot for himself created, or he's trying to do something kind of where he creates for someone else. It's kind of a serial process at this point in time for him. But you can see the flashes of, like, you can, and you just, when you see him play, especially in person, it's like, oh, he's going to put it all together. Like, I mean, you could just tell he's going to put it all together, you know? And that's exciting for the league to have, you know, a guy like that. I was watching him play and I was like, in 3 years, like, what is Jokic versus Wimby? You know, it's going to take some time before it kind of gets to that kind of a thing. And I just threw 3 years out there, you know? But that's going to be fun, you know? So Chet right now, I like, the Chet versus Wimby is a really, really fun one, you know? So I know Hawks fans are like, man, we need a win. We need a win. Like, let's just focus on getting the win. But, you know, hopefully we can have multiple objectives and enjoy, you know, a unique player, or a young player. And, you know, for Hawks fans, kind of hoping that they can get a win. Because I think a win would, like, it's always the case, kind of get them feeling better about themselves, you know, because they looked like they were having no fun. I mean, they not a single person. That they looked like they was just not fun at all. They couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get anything working. They couldn't get anything clicking. It happens sometimes. But yeah, a win would, I think, just restore a little bit of confidence, you know. So you have to see if that's what they can do.
All right, and then they get the Bucks Saturday, and then they get 3 days off when they get back home. So maybe that'll.
Yeah, the Bucks are playing a lot better since they told their coach what they were going to do. You know,
at least you know how they're going to guard you.
Yes, for sure. So like Brooke is back in the drop, and you know, and they're just kind of going back to some of the things that they were doing before. So I mean, I think we have to be prepared as people who watch the Hawks that the Bucks team this time will not be where that Bucks team was last time that they played. So that'll be and again, so it's like when they throw either Lopez and Giannis out there, or Giannis and Portis, or like, man, Jalen would sure be nice to have there. So but I guess we have to get past that. Like, oh, Jalen, oh, you know what would help Jalen? Oh, of course, Jalen is like a super helpful player. So, but the Hawks, you know, they're a professional team. They have to figure it out. They have to solve for that gap. And sometimes it takes a little time. So, you know, I think that's okay too. But, you know, hopefully they can put a good performance together tomorrow night.
Any Pascal Siakam thoughts?
I mean, it's kind of funny because I've got a lot of questions about it. And I mean, I think on offense, it would be like amazing. I think his ability to slash into a gap and the ball rotates to him. He has the skill set to just put his head down and go. He's very physical. You know, is his shooting gone? Like, he's really had a rough shooting season so far this year, you know, and he's never been a high level shooter, but he's been good enough to, make you want to close out on him, and you know, and all that sort of stuff. So I mean, to me, it's like all things, it kind of comes down to the price, you know, and you know, how do the Hawks put together enough salary to send out that it works, you know. I think some Hawks fans I see like Capella, some Hawks fans I see like Hunter, and you know, plus AJ, and you know, and all those things. So it's, you know, it's just, it has the price dropped I have no way of knowing that. I have to assume that there was enough consistent noise over the offseason that the Hawks were serious about exploring it, right? That seems to be what likely was the case. And I think the key question is the price, has the price dropped? You know, so it'll take some time to kind of figure that out. I think if it seems like the other reporting is that the Bulls want to kind of beat the market and trade LaVine before kind of any other kind of big move happens around the league. Because once the first big move happens, the market is depressed a little after that, because so those assets have been already moved, you know, and things like that. So there is a bit of a, you know, game of chicken, maybe perhaps if the Raptors are serious about doing that and the Bulls are kind of making that noise and stuff like that. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. That stuff's kind of fun to watch and kind of keep your ear to the ground and, you know, read all of the folks who are kind of plugged in and things like that and try to kind of anticipate that. That's kind of a fun thing to kind of track in the league too. So, but I mean, I do think he'd be an incredibly good offensive fit. I think, you know, how do you, if Hunter's not in that deal, for example, how do you play Siakam plus Jalen plus, you know, so, and I guess that's a good problem. Like, cause right now they don't have enough defensive bodies and, you know, and that's you, I think you'd figure that out later on if it could happen, but it's yeah. I still think having a third guard is maybe the most helpful thing. Like an Alex Caruso would be perfect. I don't think they have the, I don't think they're going to be able to kind of compete for Caruso.
No.
Caruso can help a lot of teams who are serious about themselves right now. Like, and that makes a big difference. But I understand the appeal of Siakam with Trey on offense. I think Trey getting trapped, blitzed or whatever, and Siakam's ability to kind of just attack, you know, with numbers is pretty impressive. So that's where I am.
All right, then. Watch a couple games, do this again.
Yeah, we'll have to do that again.
Good night, Bob.
Good night, Bob.